Hello and welcome back to the Gubba Podcast. I'm Gubba, a first-time homesteader following in the footsteps of my homesteading forebears. In this podcast, I discuss prepping, homesteading, and everything in between. Today, I'm going to be sharing the secrets of food preservation. We will discuss the ins and outs of different food preservation methods like dehydrating, Mylar bags, canning, and freeze-drying, with the hope that you can become familiar with them and decide what methods you would like to use for your homestead. I find that they are extremely important, especially right now in the times that we're living in where there's food shortages, there's some upheaval going on in the world, the supply lines are not guaranteed. So now is the time to learn how to preserve food. This is a reminder as well that I have a food storage guide that will help you understand and organize your food storage along with a food storage course that will walk you through how to build a food storage for you and your family. They will be in the show notes. And when I mention your homestead, I'm referring to wherever you are at in your homesteading journey. I began homesteading in a house in the city, and now I have a few acres that I refer to as my homestead. You can homestead from anywhere. And the best place to start is right in your kitchen, wherever your kitchen is, an apartment in a high rise, in another country, wherever, start in your kitchen. You do not need land to homestead. You do not need land to preserve food like our ancestors did. And I wish the world could hear this message. If we all started homesteading in a sense of preserving food, sourcing local, cooking and baking from scratch, I think we would be a lot better off and the system would have less power over us. One aspect of homesteading to me is having a food storage. There's a bunch of different aspects, animal husbandry, learning how to sew, learning how to be self-sufficient, all these different things. Right? But having a food storage is so vital. It's kind of at the heart of it. You grow a garden. What's the purpose of it if you aren't using it to feed your family or to build a food storage? But I do understand that may not be the case for everyone because different families have different priorities. But I think it is so vital for everyone to have a food storage. A part of building a food storage is learning how to preserve food. You don't necessarily have to know how to preserve food to have a food storage because you could just buy cans of food from the store and have that be your food storage. You simply are taking something from the store and storing it on your shelf. If that is what works for you, I think that's great. Do what works. Having a well-rounded food storage will mean incorporating different food preservation methods so you don't rely on just one method of preservation like canned food from the store. Yes, the canned food is convenient to buy, but it can be bulky to store. Plus, if you ever have to leave your home in a pinch, you don't want to be hauling canned food in your bug out bag. It is way too heavy and just not convenient at all. So it is convenient to buy, but it is a pain to haul around. So there are pros for it and there are cons for it. If I was going to start dabbling in food preservation today, I would start with something simple. And dehydrating is a super easy method of food preservation. And the machines to start dehydrating are relatively cheap. You can get a simple dehydrating machine for around $35 on Amazon right now. It will do everything you need it to do. Essentially, a dehydrator circulates warm air through food to remove moisture from the food. And this is the perfect way to make homemade jerkies and fruit leathers and other snacks. The food that you dehydrate will still be pliable, whereas, for example, if you freeze dry food, it will crumble because all of the moisture has been removed when you freeze dry it. I get asked that a lot. What's the difference between dehydrating and freeze drying? Dehydrating removes most of the moisture, like right around 80%. Freeze drying removes almost all of it, like 99%. You can dehydrate most foods except foods with high fat content or moisture content. For example, avocados, you wouldn't want to dehydrate because they are high fat and fat doesn't dry out like water. So you'd end up with a rancid food over time if you were looking for longer term food storage. You also wouldn't want to dehydrate foods like lettuce or cucumbers because they are mainly just water and will become limp and not really edible to eat. I mean, not appetizing to eat. You could probably still eat on them and munch on them. But on the other hand, you could freeze dry greens and then blend them up to make your own green powders. I see people do that. They freeze dry spinach, grind them up, and have a green powder. But you can dehydrate meats, fruits, herbs, and dairy products like yogurt, butter, and cheese. And yes, you may be thinking butter is high fat. It is, but it is something that can be dehydrated. And I also freeze dry a lot of things with butter. So you might want to just experiment, especially with your machine. So when I freeze dry mashed potatoes, they have a lot of butter in them, but they freeze dry beautifully, but it may affect its long-term storage. I may not be able to keep my freeze dried mashed potatoes because of their high fat content for up to 30 years. It'd probably shorten it because of the fat content would go rancid over a period of time. So seriously, dehydrators are such a great way to enter into building a food storage outside of just stocking up cans from the grocery store because you have such a wide variety of the things that you can dehydrate: fruits, herbs, meats, dairy products. I mean, making your own jerky, snacks for your kids like fruit leathers. You will be able to see that food storage can be fun by making homemade things like fruit leathers, snacks for your kids, those jerkies, which are so delicious. Last summer, I took an abundance of apples from here on the homestead and dehydrated them. I sliced them up, coated them in cinnamon, a little sugar, and lemon juice, and put them in the dehydrator for the day. They were so delicious. Dehydrator cycles can range from a few hours to 20 plus hours, just depending on what you're dehydrating. So plan accordingly with your counter space and making sure it has ventilation for whatever machine that you get. Like mentioned, dehydrating food can be a good way to build a food storage, but not for long term. So when thinking of food storage, I like to have different terms. We got our short term, midterm, and long term. I go over this system in more detail in my food storage course, but I would put dehydrated foods in your midterm storage, meaning that they will only last a few months to a couple of years, depending on what you're storing. Fruits and vegetables typically last 6 months to 1 year. Meats can last 1 to 2 months at room temperature, longer when stored in the fridge or freezer. Herbs can last 1 to 3 years when stored in a cool, dark place. And dairy products can last 6 months to a year. So this is if you're properly storing them, of course. You can store dehydrated goods in airtight containers, in the fridge or your pantry. You can store in jars. My favorite method of food storage for dehydrated food would be to just vacuum seal them. Whether you are vacuum sealing in a mason jar or in the plastic that the vacuum sealer comes with, a vacuum sealer removes air from whatever you are vacuum sealing. It isn't suitable for long-term food storage because the bags that generally come with the vacuum sealer are not thick and will get poked and let air in, or just slowly over time allow air in because they are porous. They are plastic and plastic is porous. So think midterm storage. So you're only storing for a few months to a few years with your dehydrated goods. But speaking of vacuum sealers, which I love, I vacuum seal most everything that goes into my fridge. For example, if I happen to get berries at the store, I would wash those, put into a jar, then vacuum seal that jar until I'm ready to eat them. This extends the shelf life pretty well, like up to a few weeks instead of a few days, up to a few weeks. So for example, your strawberries will never go bad again in just a few days. I was constantly running into that. They were going moldy. Like as soon as you get them at the store, they go moldy. Instead, they will last for a few weeks in my experience, and I think that's pretty cool. If I open a package of bacon and I don't use all the bacon, I will vacuum seal the remaining amount. I love vacuum sealing for food storage. It is amazing. You can vacuum seal flours and rice and beans and so much more, essentially everything. I mean, except for liquids, You wouldn't want to vacuum seal liquids. I vacuum seal everything in my freezer because it creates so much space and allows for organization in the freezer. It is a handy tool to have around. A vacuum sealer 100% comes in handy with these different methods. So you can see you're dehydrating goods and you are vacuum sealing them to extend their shelf life and to store them. You get food in your short-term food layer, like strawberries from the store, you vacuum seal them and it extends their shelf life. But I just freeze dried some onions and then I didn't vacuum seal them because freeze drying my freeze dried food goes into Mylar bags. But the Mylar bags take oxygen absorbers and I use the bags, the plastic bags with the vacuum sealer to vacuum seal those oxygen absorbers. So you open up the package, oxygen is immediately coming into those oxygen absorbers. You have to reseal them or else they will go bad. In order to reseal them, you have to vacuum seal them into another package so they don't continue to absorb oxygen. So you can see how the vacuum sealer really plays a role in all these different kinds of food preservation methods. And are you ready for another easy way to preserve food and make it delicious? Let's discuss pickling. I absolutely love to pickle foods. Pickling involves creating a brine out of vinegar, sugar, salt, and a variety of spices. Pickling is able to extend shelf life through the acidity of the vinegar, the salt content, and the lack of oxygen. All of these things help inhibit microbial growth in the food. I have been eating pickled peppers from my last year's garden lately, and they are amazing. The pickles you get from the store are just cucumbers submerged in a brine. Pickling is so easy. It takes little time and creates delicious shelf stable food. I harvested those peppers 8 to 9 months ago and they are still edible in my fridge thanks to pickling. They obviously have a vinegar flavor like pickles from the store, but you can pickle different kinds of vegetables like radishes, asparagus, and you can even pickle eggs. Seriously, pickled foods are so delicious and you most likely have the ingredients just lying around in your pantry. Pickled foods can last for a few months to a year, depending on how they are stored. I store my pickled foods in the fridge and like I said, I'm still enjoying pickled vegetables from last summer's garden. Another favorite method of food storage of mine is freeze drying. We've discussed it a little bit, but freeze drying is removing all of the moisture from a food. In contrast to dehydrating, where 80 to 90% of the moisture is removed, so the food isn't suitable for long-term food storage up to 30 years, freeze drying removes 99% of the moisture from the food, making it suitable for long-term food storage. Because there is no moisture, you can pack into Mylar bags without the risk of mold, and you can store long-term without the food spoiling. When I say long-term, some freeze-dried foods can store up to 30 years. How cool is that? They will just need to be stored in Mylar bags with oxygen absorbers, which we will get to. I recently shared my experience of freeze-drying some chives and storing them in Mylar bags on my Instagram, and I got asked if you can just store in plastic baggies. My answer to that is no. That is because your freeze-dried food just went through a process to get its water removed. And if you let your freeze-dried food sit out or sit in a container that doesn't have an oxygen absorber, moisture will come back into the food because there's moisture in the air. You actually want to be relatively quick when you get your food out of the freeze dryer and are putting it into Mylar. The longer it sits out, the more moisture it absorbs. You could put it into plastic bags if you're going to use it right away, so it's going into your short-term food storage. Freeze drying is a more spendy method of food preservation because the machines run a hefty price tag of $2,000 and up. I have a medium-sized freeze dryer that can freeze dry 10 to 15 pounds of food per batch, and it runs around $2,900. Right now at the time of this podcast, they are around $2,700. I have an entire podcast episode breaking down freeze dryers, the pros and the cons, and how to make your money back from purchasing one. I will put it in the show notes. For this episode, I will be sharing how they are beneficial to your food storage if you want to build a long-term food storage or you even enjoy camping or hunting. Freeze drying is the way to go. Freeze-dried foods from the store are expensive and they don't taste that great, and they have a lot of processed ingredients in them. I don't understand why, because you literally just freeze-dry it, you put Mylar bags and oxygen absorbers together, and your food lasts. So why are they adding processed weird ingredients? Whatever. All you have to do to eat freeze-dried foods again is rehydrate with hot water. What is great about freeze-drying is that freeze-dried food maintain a majority of their ingredients because of the process of freeze-drying isn't as harsh as, for example, the process of canning. To get into canning, canning is the method of preserving food where you seal food in jars and then heat them to destroy microorganisms that cause food spoilage. I love canning because it makes me feel like my great grandma out on the prairie who preserved her own food and had a pantry of canned food. This is definitely a time-tested method, and I think people have been veered away from it by scaring people with botulism. Canning extends the shelf life of the food, making it safe to store for long periods without refrigeration. Think your great grandparents who didn't have power on their homesteads, they had to eat somehow. Canning was how they preserved their harvest and stored food through the winter. Canning can be used for fruits, vegetables, meats, and even soups and sauces. I love it so much because you can make ready-to-eat meals with canning, chilies, stews, breakfast hash, and more. There are two methods of canning: water bath canning, which is suitable for high acid foods like fruits and pickles, and pressure canning, which is necessary for low acid foods like meats and vegetables. Each of these serve a different purpose to reach temperatures necessary to make sure the food is safe. Although I see old timer canners who just use water baths instead of pressure canners for their meats and vegetables, I guess there's a way to do that like great grandma, but I haven't. I have the individual pressure canner and water bath canner. Canned food actually lasts indefinitely. Did you know that? It's so cool. As long as it is canned properly. Keep in mind though, that over time the food will degrade and texture will change. So that chili that you canned last week may not be the same chili in 30 years. Although it would be technically safe to eat if there is no damage to the jar or growth activity on the food like mold. If there is any damage to the lid, jar, or there is bubbling and activity inside of the jar, it is not safe to eat and you will want to throw it away. Canning is like Mylar bags and oxygen absorbers in a way because they both give you the ability to store foods indefinitely. Mylar bags are thick, light-proof, metallic-like bags that you can store food in long-term. The way you get the food to store long-term, like 30 years, is by adding the appropriate size oxygen absorber for whatever you are storing. In my food storage guide, I have a section breaking down what size of oxygen absorber you need for different kinds of food. These bags are known for their strength and durability, puncture resistance, and ability to provide a barrier against moisture, oxygen, light, and odors. All these things will kill your food storage. So Mylar bags are impeccable at keeping your food storage strong. The only thing I've learned that they are not resistant to is pests like mice. They can chew through the Mylar and ruin your food storage that you have stored. If you have the chance of mice, store your Mylar bags in 5-gallon buckets with Gamma lids. These will keep the mice out. All of my freeze-dried foods, I store in Mylar bags with oxygen absorbers. You can also store things like wheat berries and noodles in Mylar bags to extend their shelf life as well. They are pretty versatile in what kinds of foods you can store in them and how long they keep. With Mylar bags, though, you cannot store foods that are filled with moisture directly in the Mylar, like fruits or vegetables, or just pouring milk in there. Don't do that. Like, you definitely couldn't just put a cucumber in there with an oxygen absorber and let it be. Oh, that'd be a disaster. Your food will go bad no matter the amount of oxygen absorbers if you are storing moist food like that. Foods with high fat content also cannot be stored in Mylar, similar to how they are more difficult to dehydrate and freeze dry. The fat will go rancid over time in storage. Any foods that require refrigeration are not suitable for your Mylar bags unless they're freeze-dried, okay? Once you freeze-dry them, get the moisture out, they're suitable. You want to store foods that are dry, like pasta or rice, or that have had their moisture removed, like foods that have been freeze-dried. Mylar bags seem intimidating because you need to know the appropriate size and amount of oxygen absorbers that you need to add based on the size of the bag and what you are storing. So, for example, pasta would require more oxygen absorbers than something like pancake mix. Pasta would have more oxygen due to the pockets in the pasta, whereas the pancake mix is packed together. I promise once you start working with the bags and you will discover what size of bags you like and what works for you and your family and your storage space. I do 5 gallon sized Mylar bags for my 5 gallon buckets and 2000 cc to 2500, so 2500 cc of oxygen absorbers for most things. Then I do a typical gallon size bag and do about 400 cc for that. Again, you will have to adjust based on your food, but there's a ballpark and you will get used to it the more that you practice with it. With all of these food preservation methods, you simply just have to start. There are some methods that are easier to start with and some others that might come later on down the road in your food storage journey due to the price to get started or your comfort level. You can listen to all of the podcasts, read all the blogs, and watch all the videos, but you won't know what works best for you and your family until you start. So yes, there will be failures along the way, but that is how you learn. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast and you found it informative and it helps and inspires you on your food storage journey. I appreciate you spending your time with me listening to this, and I hope you have a beautiful day. Bye.